Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Wilmington Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, this is Ann Ravel Petcher, your host of Wilmington Business Radio, and I am so thrilled today to have in the studio with me Kate Miller. Kate Miller is with Rowntree Losey, a multi-practice law firm here in Wilmington and one of the top 10 firms in town. We're really happy to have you here. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, we're really happy to have you here. Kate is a really interesting lawyer. Those of you who don't live in the world of law very often, some people think of lawyers with a little bit of fear and trepidation. They were always the smartest kids in school, and they were always the ones that seemed to be in the middle of things, and sometimes the idea of having to work with an attorney seems a little scary, but what's really nice about Kate is she's really approachable. She listens to you first. It's the first thing I noticed about her, and I met her a few weeks back. And so when she told me she worked for Rowntree Losey, I thought, I need to know more about this firm. Why don't you tell me a little bit about Rowntree Losey?
Sure. Well, we, like you said, we have multi-practice areas in the firm. We have 7 attorneys that work there, and we cover pretty much any kind of issue you may need help with, ranging from anything to do with your business or starting a new business, closing out a new business, any issues you may have come up in the duration of your business. We also handle estates, wills, matters like that. We are a big maritime and admiralty law firm, so any issues that happen on the open seas or in navigable waters, they have kind of their special rules and special courts kind of. And I don't personally handle a whole lot of that myself, but we have people that have been doing that for quite some time and are very knowledgeable in that area of the law.
That's an interesting specialty, especially given our region.
It is. And you really have to have a lot of experience with it, because if you're not familiar with the different nuances of admiralty law, then you're really doing your client a disservice. Mm-hmm. And we do have multiple attorneys in our firm that's kind of their bread and butter. So that's a big aspect of our firm as well. And just general civil litigation, we do a lot of defense work, we do a lot of plaintiff's work, and then myself personally, I do mostly criminal defense and family law and some other general civil litigation. So we cover a whole lot. It's hard to find something that we don't do. And then again, if anyone were to call us and we don't feel appropriate to help them, we certainly have good referrals to give them as well, too. So
yeah, sounds interesting. Well, tell me, you've been doing this for what, 6 years
now? I started practicing in 2007, so I've been at it for a little while. There are certainly many more that have practiced much longer than me, but I've got my feet wet now, I think. So
help us understand a little bit about how you do your job. What is your job when it comes right down to it?
Well, I think the primary goal of an attorney should always be to, one, figure out what the client's real problem is. And that's not as simple as you may think. And a lot of times people come in, they've either been served with a lawsuit, they've been charged with a crime, something's going wrong with their family situation or their business situation, and they can't necessarily articulate just what the issue is or what the problem is. So that's the first step, I think, for an attorney, is to figure out just what exactly is the problem. And then you also have to figure out what is your client's ultimate goal. And I see a lot of attorneys failing in that endeavor, because they follow the beaten path, or they think every case is handled this particular way, and they're not really sitting down and listening to their client and figuring out what is their ultimate goal, what's the long-term range we need to look at here to figure out how to get the client back in their best situation or back to where they were before there was a problem. Because the client also needs direction many times to figure out what their goal is, in fact, themselves.
They may not even know what their options are.
Right. They don't know their options. They don't know what the best case scenario is going to be for them in light of what could happen. Sometimes they just need someone to get them to focus, because they're stressed out, they're worried, they've got different things going on with whatever their legal issue is, not counting, you know, all the other stuff that we all have going on in our personal, professional, and family lives. So sometimes you just need someone to sit down and break the issues down for you, and then talk to you about, you know, what do you want to do with this? Where do you want to go with this? Where do you want to end up with this? And I see a lot of attorneys failing to do that. And if you don't know what goal you're reaching for from the get-go, you're not going to get there. Mm-hmm. You're going to go down a different path. You're going to waste your client's time and money. And you just need to know what the best end result could be, and then try to achieve that.
I would assume that that fear level is pretty high when they come to you, specifically you within the practice.
Because right.
As we were talking earlier, your practice is a little softer edged in terms of...
I kind of term it that way. I don't know that everyone would articulate it that way, but there's no cut and dry yes or no answers, I feel like, in my practice. Right. And I kind of joke around and say, if you're calling me, it's not a good thing. But I mean, I like for you to call me, but that means something's going wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That's what I'm here for. So, yes, I usually deal with people that are, you know, scared for their life, their safety, scared for their future, scared for their family's serenity and what's going to happen with their children or their finances, if we're talking about family law or even in criminal law, you know. And ultimately, are they ever going to get out of jail? Or are they ever going to, you know, be able to be with their family again and live their life again in freedom? So I deal with people that have a lot at stake, and they are oftentimes very scared, very stressed out. And we have to, you know, get them to a situation where they can trust me and we can talk about the realities of the situation and how to proceed with our best foot forward.
That's interesting, the idea of developing that level of trust. I would assume that maybe there are so many walls built up by the time they get to you that developing that trust is difficult.
Right. There's definitely a lot of that. Usually when they come to me, something's gone wrong with some type of relationship or some type of activity already, and they're already on guard. And they may not be trusting their spouse, or they may not be trusting law enforcement or something like that. And then I need to tell them and show them why they can trust me. And you absolutely have to be able to trust and have confidence in your attorney, or you're just not going to have a situation and you're not going to be able to get the best service from your attorney that you can if you can't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And so developing that trust and building that trust and devoting the time and energy and compassion for your client is important, because if they don't trust you, you can't help them to the best of your ability either. And I see a lot of attorneys, you know, you hear these horror stories or just, you know, the jokes and the stereotypes about attorneys is you can never get a hold of them. They never call you back. They're going to bill you if they blink their eyes.
Well, that's true.
And I mean,
in 6-minute increments, correct?
Right. There's definitely some truth to a lot of that. And one thing we pride ourselves in our firm is getting back immediately with the clients as soon as possible, being very responsive to their inquiries and letting them know that we're always there for them, because especially in what I do, and especially if we talk about in criminal law, the last thing I want is for them to say, I have something really important coming up and I can't get a hold of my attorney. I don't know what to do, and then to make a mistake that could drastically affect their situation.
Right.
So if I'm not there for them, via text or cell phone or email or something quickly, or someone from my office or a staff member that can be responsive, then it can really change their situation much for the worse.
Sure.
And that's not just in criminal law either. I mean, in your business, you've got to make quick decisions and things like that. And if you can't get your attorney there to help you, well, what good are they?
Yeah.
So that's definitely something we pride ourselves in our firm and myself personally, is having that level of connection with our clients and being there when they need us. And I think that goes back again to developing that trust as well.
Sure. Well, how do people find you? I mean, when someone has a crisis like this, I assume most of the time they come to you in crisis. Is that correct?
For me, in particular in the firm, yes, ma'am. You know, you don't go to a family law attorney unless you're facing a divorce or some child custody issues or something like that. Most people don't have a need to be proactive criminally. It usually happens
right
after you've been arrested or
right
after you've been charged. I will say, when it comes to what we kind of call white collar crime, sometimes mm-hmm. is known in the community, if you operate a business of any size or nature, or whatever type, there's always some element of, you know, criminal sanctions for something that could happen if you don't do what you need to do. And in business world, in the white collar crime world, you kind of do need to be proactive. And if you do think that something may or may not be on the up and up, and it may not be, a lot of white collar crimes are not necessarily done intentionally.
Certainly.
It's just someone just doesn't know exactly what needs to be done, or they try to skip a corner here and there to try to help their bottom line or whatever. And then all of a sudden they find this federal indictment on their desk. So it can get.
That's got to be a scary day.
Oh, yeah.
You come into the office and you have it.
And if you've already got some paperwork on your desk, then things have already progressed pretty quickly as far as that realm goes. So if you're in a business and you think you might be facing those issues, I would definitely encourage anyone to try to get counsel on board before you have any problems. And we can prevent those kind of problems.
Sure. When a business person is looking for a lawyer for the business, should they be looking for a firm that has both business and criminal law?
If you're in a business where there's a lot of regulation or there's a lot of issues going on where you're being watched by different authorities or agencies or governmental functions, then I would say that's definitely a plus. And I don't focus on the business end in my firm. We have other partners and associates that do that. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about our firm, though, is if they have a client that something comes up and they think, well, you know, we need to look into this a little more. Let's get Kate on board and see if she can figure out, are we getting into dark waters here criminal wise, or is everything kosher, or do we need to do something to show the authorities that we're doing what we need to do? And so to have those both disciplines in that firm definitely is a plus. Yeah. And it's going to help. I won't say that you always need that. I mean, there's certainly competent business attorneys that don't know anything about criminal law. Mm-hmm. But if you're in murky waters, or if you do a lot of business that there's a lot of issues that could come up, then definitely you want someone that can also advise you for any criminal aspect.
It's interesting because the more you talk, the more it feels to me as though you specialize in family law, you specialize in criminal law, and yet that seems to be a very broad description. It could be any number of different kinds of applications for your services.
Well, let me clarify one thing for you, and this is just a lawyer's thing. Specialization has a particular term in the legal realm, and you actually have to take a test and get certified to be, quote, specialized according to the bar rules. So I concentrate in those areas.
I see. Okay.
But that you're exactly right. One area, there's not an issue that's going to fall in just one section of the law. It's always going to have tentacles that grow into other disciplines. And so you don't want an attorney that's a jack of all trades, so to speak, because there's just too many nuances in the law to be able to understand all of them in every discipline. You want someone that can kind of focus in a few small areas, but you also need someone that either has, like I do, associates or partners in my firm that if I have a question that deals with another area of the law, I can go to them for help and advice. Or you want someone that knows enough to know when they don't know, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Because you're right. A lot of the criminal and the family law clients do cross over because you've got domestic violence issues,
right,
or people grab their kids and take off and now they're getting charged with a crime too. And business things like I've just discussed can cross over into criminal endeavors. And there's always more than one issue to any legal problem, I would say. So you need someone that can either be in a firm like I am that has the help and support of their partners and associates, or you need someone that's wise enough to know when they need to ask for help or seek more advice.
Sure. And I'm sure it's a little scary. I wonder if being a woman lawyer is actually probably becoming a little easier these days than it used to be.
Having practiced for about 6 or 7 years, I can only base personal experience for that long, but just knowing the environment and knowing women that have practiced a lot longer than me, I would say it's definitely become easier. We definitely have more women in law than we used to. And even when I was in law school, gosh, I'd say it was probably a 50-50 split between men and women. And that's obviously not how it was, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
I will say, Wilmington, and we talked about this a little bit before we went on air, but it's a small town, It's bigger than some of the towns.
It's a small city.
Right.
It's a big town.
It's a big town, a small city, but it still acts like a small town to some aspects because you still have the old Wilmingtonians, as some will say, and you still have the old good old boy system in the law. I see that on a regular basis in the courthouse. And you've got the Paul Bunyans of the legal community, if you will, that have been here for forever, and figuratively their heads stand above the rest, and mm-hmm. everyone knows them and goes to them, and they're the movers and the shakers, and you kind of have to break into that community. It's getting easier for women, but it's still, we still have struggles, I think, that men don't face. And especially, I think, in criminal law.
I was going to suggest that perhaps part of that historically has been that the police have historically been men. And the more and more right. we're seeing more women in the police department, which has been helpful. I see them. I live downtown and I see them going by on their horses and everything. Right. And there's women in uniform. And I think that that might help the relationship between the police and the lawyers a little bit more.
I don't know that having more women on the force makes much of a difference. I mean, I have a lot of respect for our law enforcement in the community, especially here recently with all the increase in violence we've mm-hmm. had and the gang issues and things like that. The women and the men are both just as competent and both just as hardworking. They're both putting their lives on the line. I've been treated the same, I would say. I'm not treated any differently by a female law enforcement officer than a male. But I think men and women attorneys sometimes are treated differently by not just law enforcement, just people in the criminal justice system.
I see.
In general. And a lot by the clients, too. I mean, when we think, you know, I've done a lot of higher, more violent felony crimes. I've defended a lot of sex cases, you know, child pornography, child molestation, murder cases, rape,
goodness.
Anything like that. I've done a lot of that, and it's probably not until recently that we would see women do that too much, at least not in this community. Maybe in bigger cities it would be different. And you just kind of have that old school attitude, I think, still exists that, well, women are delicate and they can't handle that and they shouldn't have to discuss these delicate issues in the community, and we need not burden the women with those kind of issues. And obviously that's a fallacy, and obviously a woman can represent anyone for any crime charge just as well as any man. And honestly, I feel that sometimes as a woman, especially when we're talking about sex charges, I almost have an advantage because I think women just have a better personality sometimes to deal with those kind of delicate issues, despite whatever, you know, stereotypes may have existed in the past. And I'm sure there are people out there that disagree with me, but
most of the men who are trying to do
right,
the same thing,
right,
I'm sure.
Yeah. But in the same breath, I know a lot of male attorneys that will say, you know what, I'm not taking those type of crimes. I just can't deal with it. I don't have the personality or the wherewithal, or I just, you know, I think about, what if that was done to my daughter? You know, what would I want to do to that person? And I understand that sentiment, but then when I hear that statement, one, they're automatically assuming that anyone charged like that is guilty, and mm-hmm. obviously that's not the case.
Right.
It's hard for them to get past that attitude. Mm-hmm. And so I don't judge those attorneys. I actually commend them for recognizing where their limit is.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, I can't do the best for this person because I have these biases or these stereotypes in my head, and I think they're better off with someone else. And I just don't see that as much with the female criminal defense attorneys. We seem to deal with those type charges better. I know I personally, you know, have never shied away from them, and I've kind of developed a little.
And I wonder if that isn't because as women, especially professional women, we've had to prepare ourselves ahead of time, sort of, for those kinds of things, sort of say, these are things that could occur to me.
You know, I've never thought of it that way, but I could see one could definitely make that argument. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, adult rape crimes, those are obviously typically done against women. The child issues are completely different.
Yeah.
But, it's hard, I would imagine, for a man to put themselves in that situation and understand it.
Sure.
And women have grown up. As if you had a good upbringing with someone there, you know, trying to prevent you from having to deal with those issues. So it is something I think we think about as we grow up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you spent, what, 6 years in the public defender's office?
Almost 6 years, yes, ma'am.
And you must have seen a lot of things coming through there.
Oh, yeah, we see a little bit of everything, and it keeps you on your toes. It's definitely something interesting every day. It's always something different.
You don't get depressed when you're in a position like that, do you?
I mean, you definitely do. You have to work hard to put it to bed at when it's time to put it to bed. You know, you can't take, and it's just so, it can be very sad because most of the people you deal with that are charged with, especially a major crime, you know, they never had an easy life growing up, or everybody's got a story. And a lot of those people's stories are just really sad. And so it can be depressing, and you have to put it away. And honestly, you know, I think the family law stuff to me is it can be very depressing as well. And you have to be able to take a step back and look at it professionally and deal with it professionally and not let it affect your own personal well-being. Because when you've got someone coming to you for a family law issue, you know, their life goals, their life dreams to have this happy family unit mm-hmm. is dissolving before their eyes.
Right.
And there's just nothing happy about that. And especially for children, if children are involved. And so that you have to be able to somehow distance yourself. You want to be compassionate. You don't want to be, you know, a cold stone, but you have to be able to go home and enjoy your life and step, you know, put it to bed, like I said, sometimes. Yeah.
Well, I think all of us women in business can take a lesson from you on how to do that, how to be able to sort of leave it at the office when you can and, right. and be able to go home and maintain the joy.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to, I mean, everybody brings their work home, but you've got to find that line that you don't want to cross right. sometimes. So.
Well, and, one of the things that we really appreciate is the way that you're giving back some of your time to the community outside of your lawyer work. So tell us a little bit about down in Carolina Beach. Tell us about your police advisory committee that you're on and the kinds of things you do in the community there.
Well, I've lived in Carolina Beach on and off before I moved here permanently and actually went to Carolina Beach fifth grade.
Oh, wow.
Elementary school down there. And then we moved away, but we came back. So I love the community. It's definitely improved greatly in the past few years. There's so much to do down there, especially in the spring and summer season. And as a volunteer committee member with the Carolina Beach Police Advisory Board, we pretty much act as a liaison between the community and law enforcement. Hmm. And I chose to volunteer on that committee, obviously because of my ties with law enforcement and criminal law.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew a lot of the law enforcement officers down there. And it's a great chance to get the community viewpoint, you know, bring our viewpoint as someone who lives down there on what law enforcement could be doing to improve, you know, their reputation in the community or to improve the way they're handling their enforcement responsibilities. And also to get their feedback on what can we do to help them. And what needs do they have? I mean, obviously, all law enforcement agencies have limited resources, and that's probably more true down in Carolina Beach than mm-hmm. a lot of other local agencies. And they work less for work less pay than, you know, WPD or the Sheriff's Department. And they work harder sometimes, I think, because it's such a small community and they only have so many resources.
Sure.
So we kind of try to help each other out, and it's a great way to get to know your law enforcement officers, to get to know your community members, and to try to put two and two together to have everybody work together to make it a better town. And we have people from the town come into some of our meetings, their open meetings, and voice their opinions. We've had people come in about noise ordinance violations and businesses that have had functions that are disrupting their, you know, housing community.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people come in with, you know, speed problems on their street and stuff like that. So,
no.
Right.
You know, can't speed in Carolina Beach because it's dead stop traffic.
In the summer, it definitely is. So, and then we have, that's a lot of the complaints are traffic oriented.
Sure, of course they are.
And then we try to work with our law enforcement down there to help them be able to do more with the limited resources. That's
sure.
what a lot of it ends up being is, you know, they want to be able to do more things, but they've only got so many feet down there. They only got so many vehicles or equipment or things like that.
Well, and they've been hit by the economy too, because right. there are fewer taxes being collected. And
right. And then, but we still get this influx of tourists during the season
yeah.
and especially down with Freeman Park on the north end
mm-hmm.
and a lot of crime happens down there.
Is that right?
You know, just people, you know, drinking too much mm-hmm. and drugs down there and mm-hmm. partying too much. And then you throw the four-wheeling and the tides coming in, and it can get disastrous quickly. And if we don't have enough foot soldiers, so to speak, down there, it creates a big problem. So we try to come up with a plan together. A lot of what we're doing is trying to come up with a plan together of how can we make everybody work better together with the limited resources that we have.
Sure.
So,
that actually makes me, the limited resource comment makes me wonder about if this economic time has hit any I guess the people who would be coming to you for services, it's kind of a hard time if you suddenly find yourself, I don't know, incarcerated or what have you, and you're already suffering financially.
Right.
It must be a little intimidating to look at a legal bill.
It is very intimidating, I would say. And I think I've definitely noticed just in the few years that I've been in this community, and attorneys that have been around longer than me and kind of predated any kind of economic downfall could probably voice this better than I, but you definitely see people that really need your help and just cannot afford an attorney, point blank. You see people that need more help as far as payment plans or things like that than mm-hmm. normally they could have come in and put down a retainer or whatever they needed to do. That's typically done, you know, in the law practice. So, you know, I try to work with people with payments and talk to them about what they're able to do and what kind of time span and try to develop a scheme where we can get what really needs to be done at a price that they can afford.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try not to turn anyone away just because they can't pay. And again, that goes back to what we open up talking about is you need to know what your client's true problem is and what your client's ultimate goal is before you can even quote them a fee. Because if you know what that is, you can kind of narrow your work to the shortest path, if you want to say. And then if you just have some attorney that says, well, this is what I charge for this kind of case,
mm-hmm.
and they don't look into it a little more, it may not take that much work.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of times it'll take a lot more than you thought it would. And then you've got your client saying, well, wait a minute, you only told me it was going to be X amount of money, and now you're asking for twice that. And we're halfway through this, but you haven't gotten me any results. And then you've got a real breakdown. So you really need to sit down and be open and honest with your client about what their potential bill is going to be and how can we work. You know, maybe this isn't as important to you as this issue is. So let's focus on this one first and let's focus your time, energy, and finances there. And then, you know, if we can cover that real main problem, then we'll talk about this other issue.
Sure.
And you
well,
need...
it's a real consultative process right. then in that case. It's very right. much like any other business, because that's certainly what we do in public relations and marketing is try to figure out the issue up front. What is it you want to accomplish?
Right, exactly. So,
and when the scope of work changes, that's right. when the price changes.
Right. And if you don't know as the attorney what you're working towards, you're going to spend a lot of time doing something that's not really necessary, and you're going to waste a lot of your client's
yeah.
money. So
interesting. Well, I know you're also very involved in the community, both for Lawyers for Literacy and with domestic violence issues.
That's right. Lawyers for Literacy is a program run through one of our professional associations mm-hmm. as a lawyer. And I go to Snipes Elementary. I know they do it at Gregory Elementary, and there may be some other. They try to get like an inner city elementary school in the community. And we go and read to some of the students, usually once a week. And either I've done it before where it's been one-on-one, me and one other student, or I've done it where I've had like three or four students come at a time.
Well, that's nice that they break it down. It's not a full classroom then.
Right, right. So it's much more intimate, gives the teachers a little bit of a break, mm-hmm. and it gives the student a chance to meet someone from the community, meet a professional that they can look up to mm-hmm. And try to talk to about career goals or advice or just do, you know, staying in school and staying off the streets and doing the good things that will help them do well in life. And we try to read to them civic or social studies type oriented books that either talk about, you know, how a government functions or, you know, American history or jurisprudence or something like that. Obviously age appropriate. And, you know, how a bill becomes a law or how do...
So you don't teach them how to spell jurisprudence.
No, we do not. Although I've had students really impress me with their reading skills. So
oh, that's good to hear.
You know, much better than I thought they would be.
And, excellent.
And that's always fun. And you know, we are, invariably you start reading and then they say, well, what's that? And then it starts a conversation, which is really what the idea is.
Sure.
I mean, they can read with their teacher, but it's nice for them to say, well, what does that mean? And then you can come as a lawyer, or we even have some judges that volunteer, and they can say, well, that means when you go to court, like with me or in front of him, and, you know, you can explain it to them on a much more personal level. And it gets them more excited and more interested in the issue.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, I found it's a lot of fun for me because I usually go at lunchtime, and you always stop right before I leave. I'm like, you know, I really don't have time for this today. I've got this deadline, this needs to be done. But if I make myself go for, you know, an hour or half an hour, you know, these kids are always so happy.
Right.
And they're running around and they're smiling and they're so happy and excited to see you. And that's not always the case as a lawyer. So it really puts me in a much better mood, and it kind of brightens my whole day. And
that's great, especially if you have to go help with domestic violence after that.
Right. Yeah. So to see these kids and just it really ends up being more of a benefit for me than for them, I think, in the long run. So that's a lot of fun to do. And if there are any other lawyers listening, I know that we need more volunteers for that program. So I would encourage them to reach out to me, and I'll hook them up with the right lady that's kind of running the program here.
Super.
And then the domestic violence shelter, I've recently become a board member, and our firm is a big contributor to their program and a big advocate for their services. And that's a great program, again, with limited resources like anywhere, but we do have the ability to help people in emergency situations. We do have a shelter in the community, and we also have other sources, even if you don't need somewhere to stay. That we can help hook you up with the proper services and advice and counseling and things like that. The shelter's mostly for emergency situations where they need to get away from, you know, whoever's, you know, creating the violence against them immediately.
Is this exclusively for women?
The shelter is, but if we if a gentleman comes, we certainly will help them and hook them up with the services that they need. So,
great.
Obviously you can't house the people together.
Right. But, of course.
But yeah, so we have the resources and the ability and the knowledge to, help people as best as possible. And, that's a great thing because a lot of these people, you know, domestic violence is really sad because what you see is the tip of the iceberg. You know, no one goes and reports the first time their spouse or their significant other beats them. It's usually a multiple thing and they finally can't take anymore. And then a lot of times they still go back. And there's so many reasons. I mean, we could talk an hour about that, why all the reasons that people go back to that abusive situation.
Well, maybe someday we should.
Yeah. that would be a very good program, I think. But yeah, it's so that's a good thing for me to do. And I kind of bring my own little aspect to it as a criminal defense attorney, because oftentimes I've represented the offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a unique perspective. And
would elder abuse come under that? Would it come under your typical family law environment? Or
Well, it depends on the situation. I mean, there's different ways that that could come up. DSS could get involved, and then that could be potentially a criminal charge.
Oh.
Or, and I've dealt with cases like that before where people have been charged with, you know, abusing their family member or someone that they're supposed to be taking care of, or, you know, a nursing facility or something like that, abuse going on there. Or, yeah, family law situations, too, that can definitely arise there. And,
interesting.
Yeah, so it's, again, as we said, there's always tentacles that go into different areas of the law. So.
Right. Well, this has been a really interesting show. I thank you so much for sharing your time and your expertise with us. And if somebody is listening who's interested either in becoming involved with Lawyers for Literacy or they're in need of counsel, whether that is criminal, family, business, maritime, corporate, estate, any of those kinds of things, how would they get a hold of you and the team?
Well, you can call me at my law firm at 910-763-3404. Or I'm always available by email at kmiller, K-M-I-L-L-E-R, at roundtreeloci.com. That's R-O-U-N as in Nancy, T-R-E-E-L-O-S-E-E. And we have a website, www.roundtreeloci.com. And we're always available, so.
Excellent. Well, this has been really insightful information, and we appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you.
And this is Anne Ravel-Petcher signing off. Until next time for Wilmington Business Review.